Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Luright. Coming up on the first part of the program today, we're going to take a close look at military spending and how much private military contractors are making from the federal government. Talk about that first. Later, we'll talk about the impeachment trial once again. Yesterday, we talked about the first day of the impeachment trial, opened up the phone lines, and after the show, we got these two listener comments.
This is Bob from Kansas City. Your last caller who was saying that he's doing better financially than he's ever done before and that he feels the Democrats are trying to tear the country apart. It sounds to me like maybe he's watching a little too much Fox News and that the means justify the ends. In other words, if he's doing good financially, it's okay for the government leaders to be corrupt. That's very scary. And my question is, if McConnell and these other Republican leaders were saying that they know how they're going to vote before they even hear any evidence, if they're willing to hear the evidence, could they be brought up on obstruction of justice, especially if they do not allow witnesses or evidence? It sure seems like they should be brought up on some kind of obstruction of justice charges.
St. Pete, I was just listening to the show today about the Donald Trump impeachment trial. And what this comes down to is the DNC wants to impeach Trump, cheat Bernie in the primaries to get Biden over the finish line, and run Biden against Mike Pence. Because they know Joe Biden cannot beat Donald Trump in a general election. Because FDR, JFK, LBJ Democrats will not vote for Joe Biden or support him. Just look at his history of legislation. He's always sided with the Republicans in his career. Now, if you look at Hillary Clinton, and it looks like the Democrats are in panic mode, break glass in case of emergency. Hillary Clinton, the attack dog, is out there knocking Bernie Sanders and saying a bunch of vile things about him, that people don't like him. He's never passed any legislation. People are deceived by him and just everything. But you know Bernie's in good shape if they had to use Hillary Clinton as an attack dog. And this whole impeachment trial is to keep Bernie Sanders out of the White House. It's that simple.
Mandy Smithberger, welcome to Double. Well, there you have some listener comments about yesterday's program, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Well, during the fiscal 2019 year, the U.S. spent about $700 billion on the military. And a lot of that money went to expensive weapon systems. Our next guest says that there is reason to believe that a lot of the money that we spend on the military is wasted, especially on expensive weapon systems. Our guest is Mandy Smithberger. She is with the Center for Defense Information, and she heads a project of the Center for Defense Information, the Strauss Military Reform Project. She wrote an article recently for TomDispatch.com headlined, "How the Military-Industrial Complex Gets Away with Murder in Contract After Contract." And I spoke with her yesterday. Berger, welcome to WMNF. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So the president has been saying that he rebuilt the military and that the military had been decimated under President Obama, and that by spending a lot of money, he's brought back the U.S. military to where it should be. When the president says that, is he being truthful?
I don't think he is. What we're really seeing is increasing the budget is actually making our military less ready. ProPublica also recently ran a story talking about how by prioritizing buying new weapon systems and taking that money away from training, taking that money away from military construction and other needs of the military, that this is actually harming the military more than it's helping them.
That seems counterintuitive. How could it harm the military?
So the reason that it happens that way, and it is counterintuitive, is that what we see happening with these budget increases is they're not going to real priorities, and it's as a consequence, we're also seeing really poor management happen, and people are throwing money at problems instead of trying to fix them. So we're not focusing on how do we really improve training, how do we address pilot shortages, in many of these cases, we've tried to throw money at the problem and it doesn't solve it. And what we need is to have real reform and real management.
During the Obama administration, was there a significant decrease in military spending?
There is not. That is false. There were some caps on Pentagon spending, but you saw such a huge reliance on the overseas contingency operations account as a kind of slush fund for different defense priorities that you did not see significant cuts. That is, you know, largely an exaggeration for those who would like to see us get to spending $1 trillion per year on the Pentagon.
You wrote an article for TomDispatch.com called How the Military Industrial Complex Gets Away with Murder in Contract After Contract. Is there much oversight when the Pentagon awards a contract to build an aircraft carrier or to build tanks or to build any other new weapon system? Is there much oversight?
There's not nearly as much oversight as there needs to be, but even more importantly, there's not accountability. So you'll have reports coming out from inspectors general, from the Government Accountability Office, raising these kinds of problems. But because of how defense contractors play the system through political contributions, through the revolving door of offering jobs to former Pentagon officials and congressional staffers, you see very little accountability for program failure.
Now, you, in your article, I'll just read the first line, which is very interesting. This is a quote from you. Call it a colossal victory for Pentagon that hasn't won a war in this century, but not for the rest of us. Congress only recently passed and the president approved one of the largest Pentagon budgets ever. It will surpass spending at the peaks of both the Korean and the Vietnam Wars. Now, in Vietnam, we had maybe a 500,000 personnel at some point during the height of the Vietnam War stationed in Southeast Asia. How could we be spending more now than we did in 1968, 69, 70?
So we have a number of reasons for that. A lot of it is that our weapon systems are completely unaffordable, that they're becoming more expensive, more fragile, and more expensive to maintain in addition to buy. And so that's what's driving the budget continuing to go up, despite having less to show for it. We're paying significantly more bucks for significantly less bang.
The Washington Post reported the other day, broke the story about these Pentagon papers in which they got a hold of papers in which the military leaders are talking to themselves and saying that, you know, while the public face of the war in Afghanistan is pretty rosy, the private face is that it doesn't look very good. There's not much, there hasn't been much accomplished in Afghanistan, at least from the point of view of the U.S. military. How much waste is going on in the war in Afghanistan?
So we've spent $2 trillion on the war in Afghanistan, according to the Brown Cost of War Project. And we think we could easily have billions of dollars of waste. We have, you know, some anecdotal examples, like spending between $10 and $43 million on a single gas station in the middle of nowhere, $150 million for luxury private villas for officials who are helping to strengthen Afghanistan's economy, tens of millions wasted on failed programs to improve Afghan industries, focusing on oil and natural gas reserves. And I think the other thing that you really learn from the Washington Post's reporting and subsequent hearings that have been held in the House Foreign Affairs Committee is that we have a system that's fundamentally broken, that it encourages this kind of dishonesty about where we are in the wars, and unfortunately not real accountability to make sure that when we put our men and women in uniform in harm's way, that we have a strategy that's coherent, that's going to be effective and accomplish our goals.
So when the president says we had a decimated military, and yet we, at some point in the last 15 or 19 years, we've spent $150 million on villas in Afghanistan. I mean, how much can a house cost in Afghanistan? $150 million seems like a lot of money. You could buy a lot of houses in the U.S. for $150 million. How did the military justify $150 million for villas in Afghanistan?
So, you know, they had the money to be able to spend it on there, and, you know, wanting, so they were able to do it. And I think it's also important to draw that distinction when you look at the different housing crises we've seen in military housing. Just think of how far $150 million could go to correcting those issues as well. I mean, they had flat screen TVs and DVD players, and these were, you know, businessmen who were used to a certain standard
level of luxury. Living.
Right. And they were fine with having the American taxpayer pay for it.
When you say $2 trillion, that number kind of like goes over people's heads. But I did the math. If you gave every American part of that $2 trillion, you would give every American about $60,000. That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
$60,000 per American for the Afghan war. We haven't won it. When we pull out, the Taliban's going to take over, and that's my editorial statement, but I'm pretty sure that's going to happen. And we lost all those American lives, we lost Afghan lives, and the money was just down the drain.
And I think that's, you know, the other thing that we need to look at with these wars is that we have a very powerful military, and, you know, they are trying to get, you know, whatever job done that policymakers select for them. But some of these are issues that shouldn't be addressed with a military-first strategy, that you had real corruption problems in Afghanistan, and that continuing to put more money into that system wasn't going to address those fundamental governance issues. And so I think it's important when we talk about potentially going to war elsewhere that we really understand the role and properly fund the government agencies like state, like USAID, in a way that they can be successful.
And cost less.
Right.
We're talking with Mandy Smithberger, who's the director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Center for Defense Information. And we're talking about an article she wrote for Tom Dispatch called Never the Pentagon, How the Military-Industrial Complex Gets Away with Murder in Contract After Contract. Mandy, you told me before I turned on my tape recorder here that you once worked at MacDill Air Force Base. Rush hour is crowded in the morning at MacDill, incoming, and then outgoing at 3, 4, 5 in the afternoon. There's a big rush hour. What was it like for you at working at MacDill? What did you notice? What did you do at MacDill, and what did you notice about your work there that might indicate that money was misspent?
So I was an analyst focusing on Iran at MacDill, and because I was primarily on the intelligence side, I didn't see necessarily some of that waste, but saw in several instances that there just wasn't very good understanding of particularly the cultural challenges facing a lot of the countries that we are, you know, trying to wage war and try and find peaceful solutions as a consequence. So those are kind of my main takeaways.
When you leave MacDill, if you look at the billboards coming out of MacDill, there's all these defense contractors, private defense contractors, looking to hire people who are currently enlisted in the military. What's that about?
So that is the challenge of the revolving door, where we have too many senior defense officials who are going to work for defense contractors afterwards. And the real problem with that is that we think that there's a potential conflict of interest, that people become more focused on what their next job is and pulling their punches so as to not make industry angry, and a real kind of corrosion of the system where there's too much deference to the interests of defense contractors and what's in their best interest prioritized over what's in our national security interest.
So when James Mattis left as Secretary of Defense from the Trump administration in December of 2018, he almost immediately went to work on the board of General Dynamics, which is a big defense contractor. The president promised to drain the swamp, and I think he was saying do away with these conflicts of interest. Well, one of his own guys went right back into the swamp.
No, absolutely. I think that shows that we have a long way to go, that the Secretary of Defense immediately went to go work for one of the top five defense contractors. And for your listeners who are interested in learning more about this issue and just how frequently it occurs, on our website we have a Pentagon revolving door database focused on senior officials. It's just all too common. Just the other day, seeing a couple of senior officials are now going off to Boeing. It's rampant.
And what about Congress? Has Congress stepped in and said there should be no revolving door? Has Congress looked at, you know, for instance, the $150 million spent on villas? Does Congress do anything about it? Is there any oversight by Congress? And is there any attempt to stop the revolving door?
So when it comes to problems like the villas, there have been hearings and you've seen some oversight, but you haven't seen the kind of accountability that you need. And really the only way that there is going to be accountability that changes these behaviors is cutting their budgets. That's going to be the way that you see change happen. When it comes to the revolving door, Senator Warren and Congresswoman Jackie Speier have introduced legislation to address a number of the major loopholes that we have in place. The House also passed legislation that addresses the revolving door across the federal government. Unfortunately, that has not been taken up in the Senate, so we still have a ways to go to make sure that we close the revolving door for good.
Is there a war lobby, or is there an effort by the Pentagon itself to cheerlead wars and extend them further than necessary?
I think that you certainly have a threat inflation lobby. So people who are saying that we have to defeat China militarily, exaggerating the threat of Russia, and that you see this in not only the Department of Defense and the lobbyists on K Street, but also in the think tank community, and that they have undue influence on shaping our policy debate. And so as a consequence, really, there is a very narrow debate about foreign policy issues between both parties, and the large consensus is unfortunately largely oriented towards war.
Currently, there's heightened tension between the U.S. and Iran. Is there any evidence that there are people who have either ties to the Pentagon or ties to military contracting companies? Is there any evidence that they're on TV pushing for war?
Oh, absolutely. So a number of the analysts that you see on TV have ties to defense contractors that are frequently undisclosed. And we've seen in previous investigations that the Government Accountability Office saw that when these kinds of conflicts occurred, that there were concerns that these media analysts were boosting the Pentagon's perspective in order to gain more contracts for their company. So it's a pretty gross financial conflict of interest.
How wealthy is the defense contracting industry? Do we have any idea how much money has been made since the start of the century? How much money has been made up by defense contractors?
We see that they are very wealthy, that their executives are some of the top paid individuals. So I don't have a specific number for you, but the defense contracting industry is doing very well, and that as we were hearing these kind of concerns about Iran, we saw that their stocks were going up as a consequence. So they are certainly profiting off of war.
So as Soleimani was assassinated, in the next few days, we saw military stocks, defense contracting stocks, go up on Wall Street.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're talking with Mandy Smithberger, who is the director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Center for Defense Information. And this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. So when it comes to the two major political parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, do the Democrats act any better when it comes to looking for wasted military spending?
No. I mean, you have progressives in the Democratic Party, and you have some people who are kind of like the Freedom Caucus in the Republican Party who are willing to challenge that status quo. But you really see a bipartisan consensus that the defense budget should continue to go up, and it's really disappointing.
And has the Pentagon ever faced an audit? I mean, there have been audits of other federal programs. Has the Pentagon ever undergone an audit?
The Pentagon has undergone an audit, but it has not been able to pass one so far. And actually, Bloomberg is reporting that there were $35 trillion in accounting adjustments just this year at the Department of Defense.
Wait a minute, $35
trillion? Yeah, trillion with a T. If we can't contemplate $2 trillion, I don't know how we contemplate $35 trillion.
So that's bigger than the national debt.
It is.
Why do you think that, you know, with all the talk about government spending, and you've got people complaining about folks who are on food stamps, and you've got other people complaining about folks who are on other kinds of government assistance, but the real waste, you know, we're not talking about a few million here and there, we're talking about trillions. The real waste is in the Pentagon. Why do you think that this hasn't become part of the national debate?
I think that the American people frequently think that they don't know enough to be able to weigh in on these issues, and I just think that's completely incorrect. I think that they have the common sense and they know what is in our best national security interests. I think the other issue is that politicians think that their constituents aren't paying attention on these issues. So if people get engaged and hold their politicians accountable, they're going to hold the Department of Defense accountable. I think there's a lot of untapped potential for the American people to have a voice in this debate.
Mandy, is there anything else that you'd like to point out about the article that you wrote about the military-industrial complex getting away with murder in contract after contract? And you're not talking about human murder, you're talking about dollar murder. Is there anything else you'd like to point out?
I think the only other thing that I would point out is that we're going to be having another debate in the next couple months about what the budget should be for the Department of Defense. And I think the kind of reporting that you're seeing about waste, I think the Afghan papers are all giving us reasons to really challenge that budget level and see the need for reductions to where that money can be better spent. And I think it's important for Congress to become a co-equal branch again when it comes to waging war and to reclaim their constitutional powers.
And Mandy, I think some people look at the Pentagon budget and say that's where the money for the veterans comes from. And they think that you got to spend more money on the Pentagon because somehow that money gets to the veterans.
Right. And I think, you know, we see that's really not. Well, first of all, most of the money for veterans goes to the Department of Veterans Affairs. So, but also, it's right for the American people to want to make sure that our military has the resources that it needs. But what we're seeing is by continuing to throw money, that money is not actually going to military and their families, that in too many cases, that it's just lining the profits of defense contractors.
Yeah, you know, I understand why you'd want to have an armored Humvee and that you'd want to have the right equipment if you're going out on a mission. I don't understand why the American taxpayer has to spend $150 million on villas in Afghanistan or flat-screen TVs when the job is defense.
Couldn't agree more.
All right. Well, Mandy Smithberger, thank you very much for coming on WMNF.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that was an interview I did yesterday with Mandy Smithberger. She is the director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Center for Defense Information in Washington, D.C. Previously, she was a national security policy advisor to U.S. Congresswoman Jackie Speier of California. And Smithberger received her BA in government from Smith College and her master's in strategic studies and international economics from Johns Hopkins University's School of Advanced International Studies. She also served as an analyst at the Defense Intelligence Agency and at U.S. Central Command here in Tampa. Well, if you want to comment about that, you can email the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. You can also call us up at 813-239-9663. This is Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. Over on our HD3 channel, The Source, at 1 p.m. today, we'll continue our gavel-to-gavel coverage of the impeachment trial of President Trump. House Democrats today were expected to continue to make their case in favor of removing President Trump from office. When the Senate impeachment trial continues, the trial starts up again at 1 o'clock and will go well into the evening. The focus by the House impeachment managers, though, is expected to shift a bit. While yesterday was spent laying out much of the evidence, Democrats were now expected to begin making the case that Trump's actions violate the U.S. Constitution. Democrats threw out the idea yesterday of offering up any of the Bidens, Joe Biden or his son Hunter Biden, as a witness. We're going to listen to a little bit of what was said yesterday at the opening session when Adam Schiff, who is the lead prosecutor for the House, speaking in the Senate, made an opening statement. We're going to listen to that part of that opening statement, not the whole thing. And I want to get your comments about this, too. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. You can also email us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Let's listen to part of what Adam Schiff said yesterday as he began to make the case for the impeachment, removal of President Trump from office.
So let us begin. When a man, unprincipled in private life, desperate in his fortune, bold in his temper, possessed of considerable talents, having the advantage of military habits, despotic in his ordinary demeanor, known to have scoffed in private at the principles of liberty, when such a man is seen to mount the hobby horse of popularity, to join in the cry of danger to liberty, to take every opportunity of embarrassing the general government and bringing it under suspicion, to flatter and fall in with all the nonsense of the zealots of the day, it may justly be suspected that his object is to throw things into confusion, that he might ride the storm and direct the whirlwind. Those words were written by Alexander Hamilton in a letter to President George Washington at the height of the Panic of 1792, a financial credit crisis that shook our young nation. Hamilton was responding to sentiments relayed to Washington as he traveled the country that America, in the face of that crisis, might descend from a Republican form of government, plunging instead into that of monarchy. The framers of the Constitution worried then, as we worry today, that a leader might come to power not to carry out the will of the people that he was elected to represent, but to pursue his own interests. They feared that a president would subvert our democracy by abusing the awesome power of his office for his own personal or political gain. And so they devised a remedy as powerful as the evil it was meant to combat: impeachment. As centuries have passed, our founders have achieved an almost mythical character. We are aware of their flaws, certainly some very painful and pronounced indeed. And yet, when it came to the drafting of a new system of government never seen before and with no guarantee it would succeed, we cannot help but be in awe of their genius. Their prescience, even, vindicated time and time again. Still, it may be because of their brilliance and the brilliance of their words we find year after year it more difficult to imagine them as human beings. This is no less true of Alexander Hamilton, notwithstanding his recent return to celebrity. But they were human beings. They understood human frailties even as they exhibited them. They could appreciate, just as we can, how power can corrupt. And even as we struggle to understand how the framers might have responded to presidential misconduct of the kind and character that we are here to try, we should not imagine for one moment that they lacked basic common sense or refused to apply it ourselves. They knew what it was like to live under a despot, and they risked their lives to be free of it. They knew they were creating an enormously powerful executive, and they knew they needed to constrain it. They did not intend for the power of impeachment to be used frequently or over mere matters of policy, but they put it in the Constitution for a reason: for a man who would subvert the interests of the nation to pursue his own interests, for a man who would seek to perpetuate himself in office by inviting foreign interference and cheating in an election, for a man who would be disdainful of constitutional limit, ignoring or defeating the other branches of government and their co-equal powers, for a man who believed that the Constitution gave him the right to do anything he wanted and practiced in the art of deception, for a man who believed that he was above the law and beholden to no one, for a man, in short, who would be a king. We are here today in this hallowed chamber, undertaking this solemn action for only the third time in history, because Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States, has acted precisely as Hamilton and his contemporaries feared.
Well, that was Adam Schiff, the congressman from California, the Democrat, opening up the case yesterday against President Trump. And the hearings, or rather the trial, will resume again today at 1 o'clock, and we will carry it live on our HD channel, HD3. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa. We're going to open up the phone lines right now and take your phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And I'm going to ask, I've got several questions to ask, but one I think is, what if the president is not impeached? Is that a victory or a defeat for the rule of law? We heard what Congressman Schiff said there a moment ago. Now, the Republicans say that they're protecting something important, that is executive privilege. And they don't want to have much information shared. The president famously said when he was in Switzerland overnight that he has all the papers, he has all the materials. He's going to keep that evidence closely held. He doesn't look like he wants to provide it to the Senate. But what if the president is not impeached? Is that a victory or a defeat for the rule of law? We heard Schiff there. The Republicans say they're trying to protect executive privilege. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Some emails have come in about the previous interview, and Mark writes this. He said, I once worked for Northrop when they were pushing the B-1 bomber at $1 billion a pop. At that time, Northrop was working on setting up operations in every congressional district in the country. The reason, so they had skin in every district, and respective congressmen and women, Republicans and Democrats, had no choice but to support the jobs that the B-1 created. Not bragging, just fact, writes Mark. Mark, thank you for that. Kevin writes this, wasn't there an issue with Humvees being unsafe in the war, and the contractor who supplied them got a nice contract and bought us a flag diamond-crusted belt buckle, but he couldn't afford to make the vehicles safer? I can't find the article, but I swear it's true. I do know that in the beginning days of the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, some of the Humvees that were blown up caused death and considerable injury to the American soldiers who were inside because they weren't armored properly. Again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. As for whether or not the guy who ran the Humvee company had a U.S. flag diamond crusted belt buckle, I don't know. There may be somebody that can do that research right now and find out if there's a legitimate article that says that or discounts that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Let's go to Kirk. And he's in St. Pete. Kirk, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Good morning, Rob. Two things. The first I'd like to say is we have to be clear about labeling the Defense Department the Defense Department. It's a war department. It's self-explained, you know. We do not defend ourselves. We haven't been for quite a while. Not this century, I don't believe. And two, you guys played a song on Martin Luther King Day about the seven deadly sins. And I believe that described Donald Trump to a T. I wish more people could see it, but evidently they don't. And I just hope everybody gets their heads straightened up. That's all I needed to say.
Thank all right, Kirk, thank you for your views. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. And our email address, if you want to send an email, send it to dj@wmnf.org. Jim writes this, I just watched the film A Face in the Crowd again on Monday night. Everyone should watch that show a few times this year, just as a reminder of what power can do in the hands of corrupt people. I love that film. Andy Griffith is the star of that film, and that is a terrific film. A long story, but there was a conservative author who was the co-host of TCM one week, and he picked it as his favorite film, too. But he thought it showed, it demonstrated liberal, he thought that Andy Griffith was portraying a liberal character, and I thought that that guy got it so wrong, I couldn't believe it. Griffith plays somebody just around the McCarthy era, just after the McCarthy era, who goes from being a homespun kind of a TV host, maybe playing some music, to somebody that ends up in the hands of the powerful corporate interests in New York and decides to do their bidding, too. But it's a great film. The film is A Face in the Crowd. The number to call, 813-239-9663. And let's go to John in Port Richey. John, you're on M&F. What's up?
Hey, thanks, Rob. About the impeachment, I'm going to make a prediction here that I think if the Senate allows testimony by witnesses, Trump will renege on his statement that he'd be more than happy to have them testify. He'll find some excuse to not have them testify. So we'll just see how that plays out. Second, I'd like to know how many Trump supporters actually listened to the Democrats' opening arguments there and the timeline that they laid out for the cause for impeachment. And the other thing I'm kind of wondering, so what's the difference between the Senate closed-door meetings where they debated behind the closed doors, got rid of the cameras, and the House having closed-door meetings or hearings when they deposed witnesses? So I'm kind of wondering, what's the difference there between the, oh, we're in the basement and it's all secret. Oh, but it's not all secret when we close the doors in the Senate. Is there a difference there? I'd like to know that. And finally, you mentioned something about what if Trump was not impeached? Well, I believe he's already been impeached, correct? I think maybe he meant what if he's not removed from office?
Yeah, thanks for correcting me on that. Thank you.
Okay. All right, that's it. Thanks.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Yeah, my question was, what if the president is not removed from office ultimately? Is that a victory or a defeat for the rule of law? What do you think? The Republicans say that they're protecting executive privilege, and that's the thing that they're really trying to preserve. But how important in the scheme of things is executive privilege? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Also been thinking about this, that if you were looking for evidence of corruption in Ukraine's oil company, would the only two witnesses you invite would be Joe Biden and Hunter Biden? Would those be the only witnesses, or are there other witnesses that you would invite? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Keith in Lakeland. Keith, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking the call. I was going to make the same comment about impeachment, and I think history will reflect forever and ever that Donald J. Trump was impeached. So I'm glad to have that out of the way. I've predicted for some time, and as I read the Washington Post, New York Times, what I see is that there is this evaporating support even among his base. And I have predicted that there would be a kind of a trapdoor moment where the public at large becomes aware of how bad this guy is, and that will, I think, lead to his defeat in 2020.
So you're saying that his base is leaving him, according to what you've read in the Washington Post?
And the New York Times. There was a poll that came out this morning, and I always read them in tandem, so I'm not sure which one it was from, but they were saying that it appears that the support for him is diminishing. And when I say that, I don't necessarily mean that the support for his removal is increasing. What I'm saying is that their understanding of his bad actions, potentially illegal actions, is growing.
All right, well, I'll have to look that up. And the other publication that you cited was
Washington Post, New York Times. Like I said, I read them at the same time. So
okay.
I never know.
All right. Either the Post or the Times. All right. Keith, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
Sure.
All right. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Dan in St. Pete. Dan, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, how you doing? I was going to also correct you about the difference between impeachment and removal of office. So we're actually talking about removal of office. And your question is it a victory for what, law, you know, high law? I believe that it's not going to happen. The Republicans are not going to let Donald Trump be removed from office. I think that's already been established. I think that what's happened is we've seen the Democratic Party weaponize the articles of impeachment, which were put in place for good reason. And, I'm still baffled. I'm still trying to figure out what the high crimes are. I haven't really, you know, even I heard his opening statement on your radio station, and all he did is rehash something from history from 1792. I really don't know how that applies to what's going on here now. and if it does at all. I'm actually discussed it with both parties, but especially the Democrats. Yeah, you're talking about sore loser. I thought, you know, honestly, and this gentleman just referred to polls. I think we've seen that polls are a joke. You know, polls told us that Donald Trump wasn't even going to be close to winning the presidential election. And up until almost the very day of Election Day, or, you know, in 2016, and it was absolutely different than what the polls told us for a couple of years, you know. And I think the polls are a joke, you know, and they're miscued information, and people can massage and make them anything they want and then print them to the public and use the mass media to try to influence people's opinions. I don't believe that this what do you call it, impeachment, this circus is going to, I think it's going to really backfire on the Democrats. I think it's shedding a very bad light right now on them.
And Dan, were you likely to vote in November? Are you planning to vote this November?
I voted in 2016, and yeah. I will vote this November, and I will vote as many Democrats out as possible as I can.
Yeah,
this is pathetic, you know. I understand you're a liberal radio. I love your music, but I don't like your politics. You know, I'm sorry. You know, it's really.
And do you think that it's going to draw more people to the polls? Do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think more. Yeah. I think what's happened is they've underestimated. The middle class, white middle class, has been a silent majority for a lot of years, and they don't stick together. They don't herd together. They don't, you know. And I've been reading, you know, memes on social media like, look, you know, there's been an impeachment. There's been no riots, no fires, no nothing. You know, people are accepting it for what it is. And for a long time, there's been a simmering feeling of the playing field has gone way too far to the other side.
And Dan, do you think that the president is a champion of the white middle class?
Yes, I do. I honestly do.
And what's the number one thing that he's done for the white middle class?
Well, look at the economy. It's rolling. You know, the people that want to work are working. And this includes black people, too. This includes all people of all races and nationalities. If you want to work now, there's a shortage of workers right now. Most people can't get help even at $10-$12 an hour, you know. People want to work. They can work. They can walk out of their house today and find a job.
All right, Dan. Dan, thanks a lot. Thank you for your phone call, and good to hear from you. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and this is WMNF in Tampa. Mike's in Gulfport. Mike, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, I was just wanting to comment that I think the conventional wisdom on why the Republican senators will not vote against Trump is that they are afraid they will not be reelected. I think that's the worst, the least of their problems. I think they're actually afraid of their physical well-being of themselves and their families should they vote against Trump. And at the very least...
And why do you say that?
Goons out there.
You think there are goons out there that would attack Republicans that vote against Trump?
Not necessarily goons, but yeah, there's people out there that are unbalanced. Unfortunately, the only way we could have a fair trial at this point is if it was on a slow course of war.
Yeah, you know, and Mike, I hate to say it, but you're breaking up, and we're only getting like every one out of every five words. But Mike, thank you. I think there's something wrong with your phone, but Mike, thank you. Thank you. I think you made your first point pretty well. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. What if the president is not removed from office? Is that a victory or a defeat for the rule of law? And if you were looking for evidence of corruption in Ukraine, would you only invite the Bidens as witnesses, as I think some Republicans have proposed? Of all the witnesses that the Republicans want to invite, they want to invite the Bidens. And if you're trying to get down to the root of corruption in Ukraine, would you invite the Bidens? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Deborah in Sarasota. Hey, Deborah, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Well, I just like to say that I think it would be an extremely sad day for this country if this president is not absolutely removed from office. He has no morals. He cannot tell the truth. and the Republican senators that cannot see this, they must be lacking a soul. I just find it extremely upsetting. And I think the thing is, if everybody could, like, close their eyes and take politics out of it, the man is who I am upset with. Donald Trump is everything that I dislike in a person, and I just honestly cannot believe that he has this many true followers. It's truly...
And Deborah, Republicans say, look, you're impeaching the guy because you don't like him. That's what they've said several times during this trial this week.
Well, you know, honestly, you know, sure, I don't care for him. I never have. But if you look at the evidence that the Democrats have laid out, it's just absolutely clear and simple. And I have voted Republican. I have voted Democrat. So I really try to look at the person and the integrity, and who I think will make better decisions. And I think we're just making this too much. He said, she said, Republican, Democrat. I think we need to really, absolutely look at all facets of who we elect to run our country.
And Deborah, just, you know, in this case, the question is whether or not he obstructed Congress and whether or not he used his power and his influence to try to get a political favor from Ukraine. So, I mean,
the way I see it, he really did that. I mean, when I look at that evidence, I see it. But I also think we need many more witnesses. Actually, how anybody could listen to Fiona Hill and not believe what she's saying, and when they say that we didn't get any kind of information, it's my goodness. This woman was so extremely articulate that I think if you just listen to her testimony again, anybody that really is not a big scaredy cat that they're going to lose their job, if you just really think about the integrity, you will look at this information and you will see that they have laid out all the proper stances that they need for removal.
Okay, Deborah, thank you. Thank you for your call. Thank you. It's good to hear from you. All right, we're getting a lot of different points of view. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Somebody from the 720 area code sent me an article from TPM, and that's the Talking Points memo website. This is from July 2010, and it's about U.S. servicemen and the armor they had. And I'll just read a little bit from it. The former head of a military contractor is on trial in Long Island for fraud, having allegedly used company funds to buy porn for his son, a burial plot for his mother, prostitutes for his employees, and a ruby-encrusted American flag belt buckle worth $100,000. David H. Brooks, the founder and former chief of body armor manufacturer DHB, is facing charges of fraud, insider trading, and using millions of dollars in corporate cash to fund, as the New York Times puts it, personal extravagance. So there's a guy who got some Pentagon money and apparently misused it big time and didn't provide the proper armor to American soldiers. Dovetailing with the interview I did at the top of the show, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to the person who's been on the longest, John in Lake Wales, I think has been on the longest. John, you're on. What would you like to say?
It was announced that there'll be cuts to Medicare and Social Security by the current regime, and I'm surprised that they would announce that to the public.
I think the president said that in a CNBC interview that he might consider cutting Medicare, but I don't know if he made any announcement. He said, and I don't have the soundbite in front of me, but it was a very short moment during a CNBC interview overnight, but I don't think there's been an announcement as such.
Well, the latest report was what I just said. First, that's opposite to what he was touting during his election, prior to his election.
Yeah, I think people should be very wary. I think every
every time the Republicans get control in Washington, they want to privatize Social Security, and they do want to cut Medicare. So I think people who are concerned about Social Security and Medicare should be on the alert. I agree.
The slippery slope, eh?
Yeah. John, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
All right.
And Chip in Tampa says, kudos to you, Rob, for a superb interview about military spending, a critical topic that needs more discussion. But then Chip goes on to write, shame on you, however, for spending so much time on the impeachment charade. Stephen, the caller at the top of the show, was probably correct about it being more a means of keeping Bernie off the campaign trail than keeping Trump out of office, writes Chip in Tampa. Chip, thank you for that. I always try to make the show, especially during the call-in segments, loose enough so that people can talk about more than just one topic. Chip, thank you. And let's go to Mike in Sarasota, who's been holding for a while. Mike, thank you for calling. You're on M&F.
How you doing, Rob?
Good.
I'm just kind of beside myself on the Democrats. What they've been wanting to do this, and everybody's got to admit it, and just like Nancy Pelosi did, they've been doing this, wanting to do this for 2.5 years since he got elected. It's getting old. I mean, the Russian collusion thing, the Mueller report, all this stuff, they just keep trying. People just don't like him. They don't like his hair. They don't like the way he talks. They don't like he's rocking it. I mean, he sells out these giant places like a rock star. He's electric. He's getting things done. If they would let him untie his hands like he was in Switzerland, he didn't even really care about this. He's going about his business trying to do stuff, and if they would untie his hands, he'd even get more done. I'm doing way better financially than I did when Obama was in there, and I didn't raise all this whiny crap about Obama. It's an okay guy, you know, but it's got to stop. I mean, and they're just digging their own grave. This is going to just charge the people even more.
So you think he's going to bring out more pro-Trump voters than in 2016?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and
you know, you can't go around with a sticker on because these guys look at Matt. You talk about looking weird or like, you know, they don't like Donald's hair. They don't like the way he talks. He gets picked on constantly. You're going to defend yourself eventually. Can't only take so much. What has he done? Look at the economy. It is rocking. I don't understand.
All right.
I can't answer that question.
All right, Mike.
That, let's
Mike,
back
Mike, thanks. Mike, thank you.
Treasure.
All right. We hear you. I get the message. I mean, I think a couple of things is the president promised to reform health care and make health insurance premiums affordable for everybody and that everybody would be covered. His promises about health care have not come true. Real wages are essentially a little bit better than flat. So even if you're working at Walmart and Target and you've gotten those raises, when you look at inflation, you're not really keeping up. You're barely treading water. The healthcare insurance premiums keep going up, and the president said he would do something about that. Endless wars are continuing. We're still sending troops over to the Middle East. We're steering them around. They may be moved from country to country, but they're still over there. They're still dying. And the endless wars haven't stopped. So those are a couple of things where I think the president has not come through with his promises, and we could do a whole week of shows on that one. But let's go back to the phones for maybe a few more minutes. Let's go to a Bob in Tampa. Bob, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, how you doing? I called actually because I get sick of people saying the Democrat Party when it's the Democratic. I sent you an email on that. You actually read it on the thing, but. This is so ridiculous. Did you read Animal Farm? Have you ever read that book?
When I was in high school, yeah.
Remember the bleeding sheep? How they changed the rules. They had the law, the rules written on the barn wall, and they just bleat the rules and the.
Yeah, some animals are more equal than others. Yeah, you know, Bob, we're out of time, but thank you very much for your phone call. We can't go back deep into Animal Farm. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. We'll probably talk more about the impeachment because that's the big news this week, but we're also going to be talking about workers' wages.
tomorrow. So that'll be one of the topics. Bill Grace has been our phone producer today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the Midpoint Program with the Surly Feminist. That's coming up in the next hour right here on 88.5 FM, WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota. I'm Rob Lori. Here's the news from NPR.